This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. We've got a lot of news happening all around the world, and right here at home, it's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So as most of conservative Twitter quickly realized, you can, in fact, make this up. Literally, this is a segment about a story that was completely made up. It has to do with Jussie Smollett. He is an actor from Empire. For how much longer? We're not entirely sure. The attack he claimed took place didn't actually take place. And over this long weekend, it was almost entirely confirmed as a hoax in some way or another. Sometimes we get together and we say, oh, you know what, in retrospect, I can see why someone might have fallen for that hoax because, you know, it just seemed real. It seemed legit. Except we know that it was nonsense, and we know why people fell for it. And no, this is not something in retrospect we should be saying, well, we should have been a little bit more careful. We should have been more careful at the time because there were lots of conservative voices telling everybody, be careful about this story. Now, I would argue you could maybe make the argument for Covington High School story saying, okay, at the time, I guess I understand why we covered it initially that way, although not this show. We were consistent on that, just like we were consistent on the Jussie Smollett story. Just like Ben Shapiro was consistent on the Jussie Smollett story. Just like everyone on the station was consistent on those stories. For you to believe the Jussie Smollett story, you would have had to willfully ignore some of the ginormous red flags. Like, oh, I don't know, playing into what read like a perfect script of what progressives think our country has become under President Trump, that at 2 a.m. on one of the coldest nights of Chicago history, two dudes, and remember, originally they were believed to be white, that's how the reporting came out, that they would beat up one of the least recognizable stars from Empire, somehow able to recognize this guy coming out of a subway, and they just happened to have a rope on them that could be perceived as a noose. And they just, for some whatever reason, happened to have a bottle of bleach where they would beat up this guy and scream, you're in MAGA country, because, yeah, Chicago, definitely known as MAGA country. And then, of course, the aftermath of that story, he wouldn't go to the ER, he wouldn't give up his phone for the investigation that the cops were trying to ascertain, since he said at the time that he was on the phone with his manager, who presumably could back up everything. Of course, there were red flags, and conservatives called it out. Conservatives called it out. And it turns out they were right to call it out because this did not happen. It was a staged attack. Smollett knows these two attackers, their brothers, who worked for Empire. And apparently, according to these reports, they were paid for the hoax attack. But that didn't stop journalists and politicians and celebrities from presenting this story as fact. Many of them didn't even give the token caution saying, oh, you know, he says this happened. He alleged it happened. They presented it as fact. Kamala Harris, senator from California, running for president. She tweeted, Jussie Smollett is one of the kindest, most gentle human beings I know. I'm praying for his quick recovery. This was an attempted modern-day lynching. No one should have to fear for their life because of their sexuality or color of their skin. We must confront this hate. By confronting this hate, she means we must pretend something that didn't happen actually happened, and then it feeds into our biases of this country and our hatred of President Trump and conservatives. Perhaps we do need to confront this story, but confront the hoax, because she was bewildered when Fox News approached her to get a reaction to the latest news over the weekend.
Which tweet? What tweet?
Saying that it is a modern-day lynching, that...
Sorry.
Yes. Jussie Smollett.
I will say this about that case. Uh-huh. I think that the facts are still unfolding.
Now, she's correct. She's correct there. The facts are still unfolding. Maybe the story that we've been told over this hoax aren't completely truthful yet either. The facts of the story are still unfolding. The investigation is still ongoing. But that statement that she just made should have been made originally. That statement should have been made in that original tweet, but it wasn't. Because of what progressives are doing to the Democratic Party and trying to do to society. They're saying you should always trust the accuser. And it's one of those positions that I understand why someone might hold that position, right? On paper, it's compassionate. On paper, it's showing understanding of someone who might have gone through some horrific act of violence against them, I totally get it. But they say you should always trust the victim. And of course, what they really mean is when the victim is a victim of something that plays into their preconceived biases that the left has about this country, about President Trump, about conservatives, that's when you should, without any question, believe them. When it comes to something that maybe shows their hypocrisy, like what's going on in Virginia, then, you shouldn't necessarily trust the accuser. This is why on the right, we've been really consistent. We've been really consistent in part because when they use this in politics, it's always the left accusing the right of doing some horrible thing, like with the Covington High School kids, like with Brett Kavanaugh. But we've been saying from the beginning, hey, we should trust it. We should respect the accusation. We should investigate the accusation. But we can't just assume the investigation is going to find that the person who is accused is guilty. That's not how we're supposed to do this. The left has decided to weaponize victims, victimhood. And it makes sense, right? A principle of left-wing thought, progressive thought, is treating everybody as victims who need some kind of handout, some kind of help coming from government to fix some kind of evil that was done at the hands of straight white men, blah, blah, blah. And of course, the media plays into this. Brian Stelter over at CNN, who is an apologist for left-wing media, he goes after Fox News on a regular basis, but that's about it. He says, the media should bear no blame in perpetuating this story.
I think in retrospect, that Good Morning America interview, which allowed him to tell his side of the story, just made things worse for him. And perhaps the questioning was not tough enough on Good Morning America. But ultimately, this is not about the media or about politicians or activists or any of the people that might have been fooled. It's about Jussie, and I agree with what everyone else has said. This is about why he might, and so far we don't know, but why he might have made this up. It just boggles the mind.
So this is all about figuring out the why. Because what you have here happening, a bunch of media outlets trying to legitimize the lie. They want to figure out why to give themselves a pass. Now, I made the statement on Twitter. We'll do it here on the radio live at 3:12 p.m. on February 19th. This is Jason Tells the Future. Producer Tom, write this down. I'm willing to bet in the coming days, and maybe it's already happened, what's going to happen is very simple. You're going to have media outlets out there saying that this was a justified lie because we don't pay enough attention to the legitimate acts of hate out there. Jussie Smollett, he's actually a hero. He decided to sacrifice himself, all for the greater good of pointing out what this country has become. I will simply say, in response to that, a very simple question. If this country is so racist and sexist and homophobic and transphobic and bigoted, blah, 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 why do you keep having to make up stories in order to prove your point? It's kind of a question I have. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Snowpocalypse Mageddon.
So an out-of-town 18-year-old kid did what Seattle officials failed miserably at. This kid, David Holston, he's from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and he was coming to Seattle ahead of the snowstorm that we just got hit with, and he decided to bring over his plow equipment. He ended up leaving the state of Washington with $35,000. He put up a Craigslist ad for some jobs. And he ended up picking up a whole bunch of jobs from businesses and people who live here because they knew that the city of Seattle didn't have their back. KHQ-TV said Holston would begin his days at around 2 a.m. He would load the plow truck up and warm the rig before heading out to do his commercial loop, which included industrial warehouses, parking lots, and car lots. After finishing up one area, he would move on to the next, typically residential areas. Now, as he was doing that, in real time, he was getting phone calls from people begging for help. And what is he doing with the money that he made? He's spending it on new equipment for landscaping and snow removal. He owns a company. And then he's going to save the rest for it when it comes time to buy his first home. So he's doing the exact opposite of what progressives want to pretend business people do. Because if you're a progressive activist, you're saying, these greedy, evil people, they're taking advantage of people in their need, and then they're just hanging on to their money. Of course, that's not what happened. In fact, David was on with our sister station, Cairo Radio, on the Dory Monson Show. He said, I'm surprised by how many jobs I got.
Well, I figured I might get $1,000 by doing one job.
Yeah.
But then as I was driving over to Seattle, a lot of people were calling me and even while I was in Seattle. And so I was working long days on it from Monday morning to Tuesday morning. I worked 24 hours straight. And there are a lot of times I would work over 12-hour days. And then I was plowing. As I was plowing, people were calling. My phone wouldn't stop ringing. And the Lord really blessed me by giving me this opportunity to come over and plow.
Oh, good for that kid. He said later on in the interview, he normally in a year makes $30,000. He made in just a few days $35,000 because of the incompetence and unwillingness by the city of Seattle to actually do the job that they could have done. They just needed they should have hired this 18-year-old kid. An 18-year-old was able to do what the city of Seattle cannot be done. Explain that. Either this kid is a genius, and no doubt he's smart, or the city of Seattle is really, really bad at what it is they're supposed to do. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So on Sunday, an employee at a Vans shoe store in Overland Park, Kansas, this dude saw a 14-year-old boy wearing a MAGA hat. He was just visiting the store. He was looking over some of the shoes, and he decided, unprompted, this employee, in front of the kid's mother even, to yell at the kid, F you, all because he was triggered by a hat. And as a result, this loser finds himself out of a job, as should happen. You should be fired if you do something like this when you're working for a company. You're a bad person. If you are triggered by a hat, that is your problem. That is not the problem of the person wearing the hat. Now, I know that there's some sort of movement with progressives to pretend that a MAGA hat is akin to a Klan hood, but only crazed fringe people believe that. Normal people understand it represents a candidate or a political movement that I either agree with or I don't agree with, or maybe I'm kind of on the fence about and I'm not exactly sure. But you know what it isn't? A Klan outfit. You know what it isn't? A hat of hatred. It's not a hate hat. It is a political opinion. It's okay not to like that a political opinion. I don't like lots of political opinions. You know what I don't do? Often, at least. I don't show up and just start yelling and cussing at someone for holding a position I don't agree with. Because that's not the civil society that I want to live in. And presumably, it's not the civil society that you want to live in. And I would argue, I don't even think it's a civil society that Democrats want to live in. This guy is a crazy person. He is a fringe activist. Now, much of it was caught on tape, was caught on video. A kid who was with them, maybe a brother, pulled out his cell phone and he started to shoot it. Now, unfortunately, we didn't catch the part where he says F you to this kid, but the kid did catch on video the mom getting in this employee's face and then reporting it to his manager. That's why he ended up losing his job.
He said nothing to you. He did nothing to you. What did you say to my son?
To my 14-year-old son.
I'm sure he's heard it before.
Do you hear that? I'm sure he's heard it before. Just imagine for a second being what looked like a guy in his mid to late 20s getting in the face of a 14-year-old boy because you don't like the hat.
What did you say again? Okay, where's your manager?
Where's your manager?
What? I was told.
Touch my child.
I'm not touching him.
Let's go. Let's find
the face of the kid who's recording.
All right, 1 second. Yeah, I'm coming.
So this mom is now up in front asking for a manager.
My son walked into the store. That gentleman first told him, take off your hat. He said nothing to him. 14-year-old child. Then he said, F you to my son. My son said nothing to him, did nothing. Right. That is a disrespectful punk right there. He did nothing.
Now, a spokesperson for Vans said to the Daily Caller, quote, our focus is to provide the best customer service experience. We did let this employee go. He's no longer with our company. The actions and comments from this employee at the Oak Park location is in contrast with our values and beliefs. We've taken care of the situation. That dude is a grown man working at Vans. Okay? So your life isn't going particularly swimmingly. And so for you to make this decision to just yell at a 14-year-old kid, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with people? I've literally never, ever. And I'm generally an angry person, as producer Tom will point out. I'm an angry person. You can just lean in. It's okay. I've never wanted to yell at someone or gone through with yelling at someone in a similar situation because I see your stupid Bernie Sanders hat or your shirt or I'm a Bernie bro. Like, I've never felt compelled. I just don't care. And I don't understand what is it about Donald Trump, other than you don't like him, that makes you act out like this. Have there never been presidents that you didn't like? Is this the first time that you've ever experienced a president you just don't respect and you're not exactly sure you're supposed to how you're supposed to deal with it? It's just so weird to me. I don't get it. But you know what? This guy's now out of a job. And this is going to haunt this guy, as it should. Because he should not be in a position where he is in front of any potential customers. He should. He should be behind the scenes. He should be stocking the van store in another city. That's the only type of job this guy deserves. The funny thing is, this 14-year-old kid was more mature in this situation than this adult. And that says a lot. This is a little bit of a theme going on in this segment.
Yeah.
You got the 18-year-old kid and now the 14-year-old kid doing good stuff. Good for them.
It was totally on purpose.
Yeah. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
So former CBS News foreign correspondent Lara Logan, who I'm familiar with her name, but I don't really watch network news, so I'm not entirely familiar with her work for CBS, but I am impressed in an interview that she did in a podcast. She was talking with a Navy SEAL, Mike Ritland, and they were talking about media coverage, and all of a sudden she kind of just rips into what she believes the media has become, and a lot of conservatives out there are giving her props because she's saying what we all know, but few people in the media will admit, which is there's huge bias.
And the media everywhere is mostly liberal, not just in the U.S. But in this country, 85% of journalists are registered Democrats. So that's just a fact, right? No one's registering Democrat when they're rarely a Republican. So the facts are on the side of what you just stated. Most journalists are left or liberal or Democrat or whatever word you want to give it.
Now, usually at this point, a member of the media will then say, but we make it so that our jobs, because we're all professionals, we make it so that we don't allow that bias to creep into our reporting. That's not what Lara Logan believes.
How do you know you're being lied to? How do you know you're being manipulated? How do you know there's something not right with the coverage? When they simplify it all, and there's no gray, it's all one way. Well, life isn't like that. If it doesn't match real life, it's probably not, something's wrong. Right?
And that is a perfect way to view any story coming from Fox News or from MSNBC and CNN, right? This is not something that is exclusive to liberal journalists. This is something that all of us need to view news through. And if we viewed it through the lens, this exact lens, the Jussie Smollett story, would folks on the left immediately gone to the point of, oh yeah, this totally happened? Or would they say, whoa, this is kind of almost like a perfect script, too good to be true, maybe we should review before we go ahead and assume that Jussie's telling the truth?
Right. So, for example, you know, all the coverage on Trump all the time is negative. There's no mitigating policy or event or anything that has happened since he was elected that is out there in the media that you can read about, right? Well, that tells you that's distortion of the way things go in real life. Because although the media has always been, historically, always been left-leaning, we've abandoned our pretense, or at least the effort, to be objective today. Yep. The former executive editor of the New York Times has a book coming out, Jill Abramson, and she says we would do, I don't know, dozens of stories about Trump every single day, and every single one of them was negative. She said we have become the anti-Trump paper of record. Well, that's not our job. That's a political position. That means we've become political activists, in a sense, and some could argue propagandists, right? And there's some merit to that.
There's a lot of merit to that. And good for Lara Logan for pointing this out, because there are so many apologists in the media who will take a position because they don't want to be judged by their colleagues. Because I guarantee you, there's some folks who work at CNN. In fact, I know for a fact there are, because I know some people who work at CNN, who hate the fact that they lean in so heavily into going after Donald Trump. They hate it, but they can't say it publicly because then they'll be out of a job. I also found out that everyone at CNN hates Brian Stelter.
Oh, I believe it.
That's what I was told by my friend.
You know what? I think Zach from Kennewick on the text line has it right. I think I have a new media crush.
So your media crush last week was Poppy Harlow until you realized that she's married in her mid-30s, and I believe she has a few kids.
Oh, that didn't
now you're
matter
saying
so much
Laura Logan. Or Lara Logan.
Lara, Laura, Laura. I don't know.
But you're now a fan of hers?
Yeah, I think she's the one.
Because of this video or because you Googled images of her? Be honest.
I plead the fifth.
Yeah. You're a pervert. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Some positive changes for veterans seeking assistance from the VA. The Appeals Modernization Act, AMA. It's in full effect, and it's impacting the region with a new operations center in SeaTac. Joining me on the line with more is Margarita Devlin. She's the Principal Deputy Undersecretary for Benefits with the Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So I'll be totally honest. On the surface, when I hear this, it reads a little bit like a boring topic. But the truth is, it's incredibly important to a whole bunch of people in this region. Take us through why this is something we need to be aware of.
Absolutely. I'm happy to tell you a little bit about it. So the Appeals Modernization Act was passed in 2017. And what it does is completely transforms the process for veterans who are filing claims for disability compensation with the Department of Veterans Affairs. When they receive their decision, if they disagree with that decision, they can file an appeal. And the process that the veterans had to go through before this legislation changed it was really broken. The veterans were very frustrated. It took sometimes 3 to 7 years for their appeals to be decided because it was a very cyclical process. It didn't really have a clear beginning or an end. And as a result of that, the appeals inventory grew 350% in the last 15 years of veterans having to wait a long time for their appeals decision, and this changes all that.
So how does it change that? What is easier under this system than in previous?
I will clarify. So the new system has three lanes that a veteran can choose. And those three lanes allow the veteran to kind of take a little bit more control over the process. One is second level review lane, which allows a seasoned claims examiner to look at the decision that was previously made, and they can either overturn the decision or return decision for correction. So no back and forth, it's clean, they get a new decision review. And another one is called the supplemental claim, and what that does is allows the veteran to submit new information that maybe wasn't available at the time they first filed their appeal. And then the third one allows the veteran to go directly to the Board of Veterans Appeals rather than going through other processes before they can get to that point.
I'm particularly curious about the second lane that you just mentioned there, this ability to add on to an appeals process claim. Because, look, the truth is, and to your point, if it can take years before a decision is made, well, in those years, things can change and that they're incredibly pertinent to the actual appeals process.
That's correct. It can change. And so that's why the veterans get that option, because if they know that something's changed and they have new information, then it behooves them to choose that option and submit that additional information. But in many cases, in the past, because it took us so long to decide those appeals, if you can imagine, over the course of multiple years, that veterans' disabilities would change. Under the new process, we will be deciding these appeals in 125 days or less.
Wow.
Which means it'll be more real time, and we would have less of that churn because of the delay and how long the process was taking before.
Are you seeing anything in particular that tends to get appealed more so than others?
You know, I don't have data right now off the top of my head on particular disabilities, but I can tell you that it's been pretty consistent that about 10 to 11% of our veterans, when they receive a decision on their disability compensation, will typically appeal.
Just joining me, we're talking with Margarita Devlin. She's the Principal Deputy Undersecretary for Benefits within the Department of Veterans Affairs. We are talking about the AMA, the Appeals Modernization Act, which, again, on the surface seems kind of dull, but in reality, this is something that's going to make the lives of our veterans so much easier as they go through the appeals process. Take us through exactly what's going on today in CTEC, because you had an event earlier today.
Absolutely. So the Seattle Decision Review Operations Center is one of three centers across the country. There's one in Seattle, one in St. Petersburg, Florida, and one in Washington, D.C. And these decision review operations centers will do that first lane of the reviews of the decisions. We've hired 230 employees to staff the Seattle DROC. And by the way, over 55% of those employees are actually veterans themselves.
Nice. So they actually understand the process a little bit differently than someone who is, you know, like a 32-year-old who this is maybe his or her third job, mid-career, right. A little bit different. For you, under President Trump, how has his leadership gotten to inspire you to do these types of things? Because obviously every president, Democrat and Republican, I think their hearts are in the right place. They say they want to make it easier for veterans, and then the complaint is nothing ever gets done. So how has it been different under Trump?
Well, I can tell you that this Appeals Modernization Act was signed into law by President Trump on August 23rd, 2017. And President Trump has been very, very supportive of veterans issues and of the Department of Veterans Affairs and all of our transformation efforts that we're undertaking.
How long have you been in this kind of role?
So I've been in the VA for, it'll be coming upon 24 years
wow.
This May, my 24th year anniversary. I've been in this role since May of this year, this past year.
So over the course of the last 24 years, have you been able to identify some just things that are bureaucratic nightmares that don't have to be? Because obviously the AMA is a response to some of that. What else is down the line as far as, hey, maybe we don't have to do everything written on a sheet. We can put it into the computer one time and it gets, you know, sent out to multiple departments and multiple people.
Absolutely. Well, I can tell you that we've undertaken a lot of transformation efforts that have gotten us to what you're describing. For example, our national work queue allows us to put work in the hands of employees that are available, whereas in the past, the work was specifically at stations. So if you had more capacity at one regional office than another, you couldn't divert the work.
Ugh.
So now with the national work queue, we can do that. We can also prioritize veterans' claims based on things like if they are terminally ill or if they have financial distress. We can prioritize those claims now, put them to the front of the line. So a lot of opportunities as we modernize our IT system mm-hmm. and our processes to look for opportunities where we can do things better, faster, so that veterans don't have to wait as long for their decisions.
Why does it take so long to make some of these changes? Because you and I, as we talk about it, will say, of course, this makes perfect sense. And the truth is, if this was the private sector, these changes probably would have been made a long time ago. What is getting in the way of moving faster? Because you've heard the same complaints that I've heard from audience members who are vets. Like, just the process takes so long.
The process of change?
Yeah, just like upgrading to your point of modernization. Well, what you're doing isn't earth-shattering in the sense that it's new technology, but it's new to Veterans Affairs. So why does it seem like these kinds of changes take so long? Is it just the beast of the bureaucracy?
I think in some cases, if you look at, for example, our IT systems, we have many legacy IT systems that it takes a lot of work to get off of those IT mm-hmm. systems, to develop the new systems, to get them in place. That takes a lot of work and sometimes takes a lot of time. So, for example, this Appeals Modernization Act, it started really in 2016 with a collaboration effort from congressional staff, VSOs, and VA getting together to really, first of all, admit that the process is broken and then really sit down and map out an outline of what would it look like if we were going to fix this process. So from 2016 to now, it took really that collaboration and innovation to make it work.
And I'm glad the part of this conversation was, look, we have to admit that there are some problems that need addressing. And so last question for you is, what would you say to veterans out there who up until this point have been a little bit pessimistic as to the future of Veterans Affairs, just in a general pessimistic attitude of, oh, it's never going to get better? What do you want to say directly to them?
What I would say to veterans is give us a chance and trust us again with the benefits that you've earned. We want to take care of our nation's veterans, and we realize that in some cases, if a veteran has either had a bad experience in the past or maybe didn't even try to engage with VA, but maybe heard about other people's experiences, or even worse, maybe just because of what's sort of in the media, maybe just assumed that it would be a bad experience, I would say please give us a try. And I believe that the VA has transformed to the point that whether you go to a local medical center or outpatient clinic or to your VBA regional office, that you're going to have a different experience. Yeah. We promise you that if you don't have a great experience and you let us know, we will fix it.
And I've got Margarita Devlin's personal cell phone. We will call her directly if there's any problems. I've been joined this afternoon by Margarita Devlin. She's the principal deputy under Secretary for Benefits for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Margarita, thank you so much for stopping by. I really do appreciate it. It's fantastic new avenues that you guys are taking. Really enjoy it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. We're live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Thank you so much for tuning in. The New York Times is what CNN is calling a bombshell report, indicating that the president asked the former acting attorney general, Matthew Whitaker, to install, to oversee the investigation into Michael Cohen, that they install U.S. attorney Jeffrey Berman. Now, Jeffrey Berman is seen as a supporter of the president and seen as someone who might interfere with the Michael Cohen investigation. Now, the report notes that Whitaker knew he couldn't put Mr. Berman in charge and that ultimately the president, quote unquote, soured on him in the end. Now, this is, if true, an indication that there might have been corrupt intent, but it is not actual obstruction of justice, because he didn't succeed, and we don't exactly know truthfully why he wanted this particular person involved. It doesn't look good. But when CNN goes overboard in their coverage of anything, you can generally take it as it's probably significant, but not as significant as they pretend. And that's generally how I view anything at this point on CNN, because earlier today, this happened, I want to say about 45 minutes ago, maybe an hour ago, their national security analyst, Samantha Vinograd, claimed that, quote, there is a chance, end quote, that Russian President Vladimir Putin is, quote unquote, controlling the White House. I guess there's a chance. Yeah, there's a chance. Okay, cool. Thanks, man. There's also a chance that Elvis Presley is alive and controlling the White House.
Yeah.
Like, there's a chance.
CNN has given us a lot of evidence that we should proceed with caution.
Literally everything that's on CNN should be taken mostly with a grain of salt, especially any of their analysis. It's not to say that I don't like some of the people on CNN. I do. Like I said a couple seconds ago, I have a friend who works at CNN and he's on air pretty frequently. I think what he says is interesting, but he's an analyst. Don't trust the analysts in general on CNN, especially the ones that pretend to be actual news reporters, because Bright. They're not. That wasn't that good. Your timing on that one.
Okay, sorry. Let me say it clear. Brian Stelter, don't trust him.
I agree. I won't take issue with your message. I take issue with your delivery, Producer Tom, because I agree with your message. Brian Stelter is not a reporter. He's annoying. Como has a piece about older millennials quitting Facebook. And for the individual that they focused on in this story, he says he did it because of privacy concerns. His name is James Hong. He is 35 years old. He's a nonprofit director. And he says, I am fed up with Facebook. In fact, he posted a note that he was quitting.
When it's, you know, Facebook mining my data or mining data from my friends that I never kind of voluntarily, you know, gave to them, that's when it's really concerning.
It's not concerning. Not really. I mean, the truth is you just maybe didn't know it was happening, right? And the best way to talk about this is probably to acknowledge that you don't do any research before signing up, and maybe that's a mistake. Now, to him, he thinks it's a mistake. To me, I don't sign. I don't read anything that they ask me to sign before I accept, and I'm okay with it. This whole idea that it's concerning that Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever has access to some of your public information or even some of your private information that you willingly give but you expect it to stay private, it's just, I'm not moved by it. I don't think anyone truly is. Because if you tell people in a general sense, if you just ask the question, are you concerned with privacy issues concerning social media? I'm assuming most people would say yes. I suppose I would say yes, but maybe not if I'm trying to be a smartass. But then if you followed that up and said, okay, if your privacy concerns means that you're not going to have Facebook for free or Gmail for free or Instagram for free or whatever for free, would you just get rid of those accounts? The answer is no. Most people will not give up access to these free services because of some privacy issue. Now, this guy, James Hong, he is in the minority here. He's not the only one who they spoke to. David Putnam tells Como he deleted his account because of the Cambridge Analytica fiasco.
When I saw that, I deleted the account because that was ridiculous.
Okay. Was it, though? I find myself questioning the people who do interviews like this. My sense is they're already privacy nuts, and they kept their Facebook account so they could make this grand gesture of, I'm so serious about privacy, I am finally getting rid of my Facebook. I think it's all staged in a way. I just don't believe people when they say they care about privacy. I don't. Because you want to know the truth? We're all better served that Facebook has access to us because we know that the only way that they can operate is if they serve us with ads, right? I mean, they have to make money, and none of us would want to pay for Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And so wouldn't you rather live in a world where they specifically target you based on your habits and based on what they think you might actually want to purchase? I'm on Instagram a lot more lately than I am on Facebook. I don't know why, but Instagram is more interesting to me. I get hit with ads all the time. Instagram is able to target me with ads to a certain degree that I'm almost likely to purchase anything that they show me. I have a likelihood of about 75% that when they show me an ad, it's something that I actually want, and I go ahead and purchase it in the moment. I would prefer to get that than on Instagram getting a whole bunch of ads for buying diapers, buying women's shoes. So I think I'm better off with the hyper-targeting stuff. I don't know why people are so upset.
I think they survey like 100 people and then find the 3 that say they are quitting social media
and then talk to them. I don't know if a whole bunch of people who are quitting Facebook are quitting over privacy rights. They found someone who is, or they found someone who did, and then they say, oh, there's a growing trend of millennials quitting Facebook. Well, a lot of millennials are quitting Facebook because they just don't see the need for the service anymore. It's being replaced by something else. So let's not pretend that people are quitting Facebook, but they really don't want to, but man, they have to. I'd love to hear from you on this. 1-800-465-8770. Are you moved by these concerns over Facebook and privacy? Are you getting rid of your accounts? I remember seeing some people mad that KTTH asks for your age and your zip code. Like, you know, we're not selling that to target you, not yet at least. I mean, the goal is to find out a little bit more about you so that when we do have ads, we know, hey, our audience is typical 47 years old and lives in Enumclaw, whatever it is. 1-800-465-8770.